Hey, everybody. I am Kai Rizdahl.
And I am Molly Wood. And welcome to Make Me Smart, the podcast where we are joined, as always, by you, because none of us is as smart as all of us.
We are going to take some time this week, look at the big picture economic moment that we are in, and spend a little bit of time talking about how we got here, because it's actually kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. And where we might go from here. Sure. We're going to hear from Silicon Valley pioneer Tim O'Reilly, who, fun fact, I used to work for a million years ago, who has some pretty, he's obviously a book publisher. He founded O'Reilly Media, but a futurist, a venture capitalist, a small business owner, and he's got some pretty fascinating thoughts about that, those larger economic questions. We also got an answer to our Make Me Smart question from movie producer Daniel Lin that kind of couldn't be more resonant.
Yeah, he did the Lego movies, by the way. That's him.
Yes.
Yep.
And they're so good. And so is his answer. And, of course, we have your thoughts, particularly about our Man in the High Castle episode. But before that, oh, my God, so many thoughts. That's never going to – we're going to be talking about the Man in the High Castle until nigh on the end of days.
Yeah.
But first, we're going to get our fix.
All right, so very quickly, some items in the news on this Tuesday and in the past, like, weekish since we did the book episode. Want to touch very quickly on the President of the United States and the Chairman of the Federal Communications Commission. His name is Ajit Pai, with whom Molly Wood has spoken at length, by the way, for Marketplace Tech. The President, as you know, came out, it was like 10 days ago. Maybe more, 10 days, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And basically said, I don't like the way the news is characterizing me. Let's investigate them, which is, this is a very close paraphrase. Let's investigate them and, if necessary, investigate their licenses, whether they should be challenged. And of course, everybody involved in media and or democracy said, what? The person we didn't hear from, though, was the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, whose job it is to manage federal communications, if you will, that kind of policymaking stuff. So anyway, so very long story short, today we got a piece of tape from Ajit Pai in which he said this about what the president said. Here we go.
I believe in the First Amendment. The FCC, under my leadership, will stand for the First Amendment. And under the law, the FCC does not have the authority to revoke a license of a broadcast station based on the content of a particular newscast.
I just thought that was interesting and important to get on the record.
Yep.
And I would love to hear, since you did, I mean, you sat down with him for like a half hour, 40 minutes, right? You had a chunk of his time.
I did. And boy, would I like another run at him these days.
Yeah.
I mean, the interesting thing about Ajit Pai is that he is in many ways like the most hated man on the internet. But he is more, I think, in some ways more reasonable than he initially appears. I think he, you know, for example, is sincerely committed to closing the digital divide and extending broadband access for all. He's like a Kansas guy who wants his parents to have better internet access. I think that is true. I think he is also a guy who is very, very ambitious and who is doing his darndest to keep his head down right now and not get any Trump on him, I guess. Not get pulled into – that was I wish I could rephrase that, but I kind of don't want to also. I mean, I think he's somebody who's clearly trying not to get pulled into all of the storm that's happening in Washington right now. And he even said during our interview, I said, do you have these moments when the president goes after individual companies, companies with whom you are trying to forge relationships to build out, for example, a broadband infrastructure? Does that make it hard for you to do your job?
Mm-hmm.
And he essentially said, hey, man, I'm just working here.
Mm-hmm.
Just keeping my head down. Just trying to get done what I can do, which is why it took him something like 6 days to come out and say, hey, that's not how broadcast licenses work.
Right.
And it isn't even about a commitment to the First Amendment necessarily. It's more like, no, that's not how they work. Individual stations might get licenses.
Yeah, there's the regulatory policy bit, right? And then there's constitutional law bit. Yeah, totally.
Which just makes no sense at all. But I do think it's interesting that as somebody who initially, like, we've been watching Ajit Pai's rhetoric really change since the Trump administration took over, came into office. This was a guy who came out, he co-wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post about net neutrality that was so aggressive and so sounded like the Trump administration in terms of, you know, talking about liberal lies and the hysteria of the media when it came to net neutrality, and somebody who has really changed that message, really modulated himself since then. And I think is frankly just trying to keep his head down and stay out of it. And it's as we see from these comments this week, which were long overdue. Like, you can't not affirm the regulatory framework that exists around broadcast in this country. And ideally, you should also not fail to affirm your support for the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, like, as the head of the agency in charge of this, for him to not say anything is not okay.
So, stepping back from the minor constitutional matter that we had at the beginning of the program, I am going to say
something. Don't we
every day? Yes. I'm going to say something now that I think will set the tone for the rest of this conversation, or at least this segment of it, and that is this. Capitalism and the free market don't care whether you live or die.
Yeah. Ouch.
They don't. And here's why I say that, and here's how we got to this roundabout sort of way of thinking about this. This is a very interesting time now in this, first of all, political economy, but just the straight up economy as well. You've got the healthcare thing going on. You've got the Dow at record highs. You've got the 20th-ish anniversary of Black Tuesday when the stock market had its crash. You've got the 10th anniversary of the financial crisis. And it's just, it's all a very interesting moment of, is our economy and capitalism working the way it is supposed to work?
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think that's the framing question for the next little bit of our collective lives here.
I think so. And so we are going to, and you know, this is something that careful listeners, regular listeners to our show will have heard us talk about a lot, which is the question, you know, it gets to questions of income inequality. It gets to questions of tax policy. It gets to, you know, questions of personal security and data breaches and, you know, stock sales at Equifax. Like, it basically comes down to everything, which is, at what point does money need to care about the impact that it has on humans?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to try to, you've heard us mention it before, and we're going to try to sort of take some of these moments that are happening now and put them in that framework. Connect those dots.
Let me throw another one at you, actually.
Yeah, hit me.
Facebook and Twitter and their role in our national mood right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Facebook, you know, it's really funny. There was a CNBC editorial the other day saying essentially that if you look at the media right now, that you would think that tech is the biggest villain on earth.
Yeah.
And it's just a... And you can't blame Facebook and Apple for the choices that we consumers make. And that, to me, was the perfect kind of metaphorical framing for what always happens in a discussion about whether capitalism is out of control. This idea that we've got all this choice, that we consumers have a choice about using products that are specifically and carefully and with focus and research designed to addict us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, designed almost as carefully as cigarettes were designed to addict us. But it's really, I mean, you're a former.
I don't know if you remember that thing we had where this was like months ago, and I pointed out that there's some new app of that could change all the icons on your phone to black and white. And I said, I don't want that because I look at my phone in the pretty pictures. And you said, that's because it's supposed to be addicting, dude.
It is.
Right?
Like, the entire point, the like button.
Right.
I mean, you know, and it's funny because the op-ed totally acknowledged the fact that, for example, you get a little dopamine hit every time you like something on Facebook, that the point of engagement is that, you know, engagement is just another word for nothing left to lose. No, for addiction. So it's really interesting to look at this conversation around Facebook and Twitter and whether, in Facebook's case in particular, whether it is, in fact, a giant entity that's completely out of control, that doesn't even seem aware of its own inner workings, but is willing to sell anything to anyone and let anyone create a page and post, you know, kind of whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
Notwithstanding its own totally capricious rules around censorship, as long as there's engagement.
Totally. So now we said all that so that we could say this. All of this stuff is working, and here comes the controversial point, the way it was designed to, right? Capitalism right now is a very interesting creature in that what is happening is the way private companies want it to happen. I'm just saying, right? It is.
Well, yes. So we're gonna explore that conversation. How did it get that way? Right? Because I think the corollary to this conversation is about incentives. For example, if you look at the Hollywood situation, the Harvey Weinstein situation, the fact is that the incentives aligned in Hollywood to enable Harvey Weinstein for decades. And when the Hollywood Reporter interviewed Bob Weinstein this weekend about the future of the Weinstein Company, he said, quote, "The banks have been supportive. They want to see us succeed."
Yep. Because the banks have investments, right? I mean, let's, you know.
Yeah. So I recently spoke with Tim O'Reilly. You heard me mention at the top of the show, who is somebody who has a particular knack for coining like the right phrase at the right moment. What he is calling the financial markets and our capitalist system right now is he's calling it a rogue AI. Like, it is an algorithm that has gone rogue and needs some correction. So that if it originally was working as it should, maybe now the incentives have spun so far out of control that the algorithm needs fixing.
Realistically, if you look at Google search quality algorithms or Facebook's newsfeed algorithms, and then you start to look at Wall Street, you see Wall Street with a very different perspective. Because you understand that at Google and at Facebook, the algorithmic systems, whether it's AI or big data or, you know, just plain old programming, they're trying to do something. At Google, they're trying to optimize for relevance in search and ads. In Facebook, they're trying to optimize for engagement. You know, and we saw with fake news how that can go wrong. And then you ask yourself, what is Wall Street optimizing for? And it's clear that it's optimizing for shareholder value. And that has become the mantra, you know, over the last 40 years. Create extractive value for financial players, whether or not that decimates communities, whether or not that puts people out of work. And that is really sort of the definition of an algorithmic system that's hostile to humanity. You know, we are getting the economy that we ask for. And I see all of this discussion by economists that sort of assume that it's somehow a natural phenomenon. You know, that this is just what happens in the economy because technology, you know, puts people out of work. And I say, no, no, it's putting people out of work because that's what we're asking it to do.
So I feel like that's an interesting corollary to what you're saying. Like, you're saying it's working as designed.
Right.
He's saying the incentives are misaligned and we've asked it to work that way so that some people can make more money.
Yeah, the people in the position of power, right? The people who have the levers of power are making it work for them, which is, oh, by the way, if you go to the granddaddy of them all, Adam Smith, self-interest is part of what makes the economy work.
Oh, man, we are so going to talk about that.
I know. We totally are.
We are so going to have that debate.
We totally
are. Let's hear a little more from Tim O'Reilly. He had some further thoughts on this topic. Okay. So many thoughts he had.
You see that the straight line continued increase in productivity. It's pretty straight line. But average household income flattens out starting in the 70s because we started saying, wow, we have to actually make sure that the money goes to capital and not be shared equally by all the parties. And I think we've done a great deal to increase consumer surplus in the economy, you know, things becoming cheaper for consumers. But we've really gone very much backwards on family income. And that's leading us to a very bad place in the economy.
Look, I don't want to get all wonky here, right? But if you look at the Republicans' tax reform plan that they're talking about right now, most of the advantages in that plan go to the owners of capital. This is actually how economists talk about it.
Yeah.
You've got the owners of capital and you've got labor. And most of the gains in the current Republican tax proposal, which is, I will acknowledge, a long way from complete, go to the owners of capital. So here you have the government engineering tax policy, which is the primary way government changes our behavior, right? They're engineering tax policy to benefit the owners of capital. So are we at all surprised that the owners of capital are gaining in this economy? If we are surprised, we are not paying attention.
Yeah, I won't say I'm surprised, but I will say I'm not totally buying the argument that that's how it's supposed to work.
Oh, yeah, no, that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying at all.
Yep.
That's not what I'm saying at all.
We're going to discuss this a little more. I should say now that Tim O'Reilly has a new book out this week. It's called What's the Future? WTF, What's the Future and Why It's Up to Us. And it's a lot about this. I also talked to him specifically about tech on Marketplace Tech. So go check that all out.
Yeah.
But I think the question we are asking here is, should we tweak this algorithm, right? Do we need to take this car into the shop, look under the hood?
So wait, are you referring to the economy as an algorithm?
I think it is a really...
I know that's the language O'Reilly used, but...
Right. Well, so what is the metaphor?
I don't know.
I mean, I think I think any system, you know, one of the things that we keep talking about with Facebook, and this is why the algorithm metaphor does make a little bit of sense to me. Dear listener, I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Like, what do you think is the closest metaphor for what the economy is right now? But it is a large, complex system that's almost completely outside of our control.
But it by definition is inside our control, right? Because we are talking now about tax policy. We're talking about healthcare policy. We're talking about the federal budget. I mean, we in theory, the people, but, you know, not really, have levers of power that we can use. It's not like we just turn it on and let it run.
Do we?
You know? Is your dishwasher going? Is that what I hear?
My printer just decided to wake up out of nowhere.
That's fine.
It's like
that's
some.
Good.
It's speaking of a rogue AI.
I was just going to say the Internet of Things, man. Anyway,
I haven't printed a damn thing.
So I alluded to Adam Smith. We're going to talk actually a little bit, not this time. Maybe next week or in a week or two or whenever we get around to it. Talk about Adam Smith and the Wealth of Nations and a theory of moral sentiments, and because this goes way, way back, man. I mean, it's not like, you know, the American economy sprang fully formed out of the ground today.
And you can't say. That Adam, this is exactly how it's supposed to work and the invisible hand or whatever, and then say we're going to talk about that later. Like, it is important to at least acknowledge that Adam Smith had a whole other book that he worked on for most of his life that was essentially a theory of moral capitalism. It can be argued a theory of moral capitalism, and that the part that we've based our whole economy on, the invisible hand idea, was basically a footnote in The Wealth of Nations that self-interest alone drives us. Like, I think you could even go back to the granddaddy and say that there's an argument that there should be a better way.
All right.
Oh, look, the dog
woke up
too.
You got your dog too, man. It's a busy day.
Everybody's getting in on this conversation.
There in the Molly Wood household. Holy cow.
The printer's like, dude, there's a better way.
Wow. And here I am in a quiet little soundproof room. anyway, so here's what we need out of y'all. Questions, thoughts, comments about the basic premise here, which is that maybe things aren't working in the most optimal way. And whether or not it can, should be changed, and if so, how? MakeMeSmart@marketplace.org. You can hit us up on Twitter. We're on Facebook. I mean, you guys know the drill. You know how to get us. We're not hard to find.
And your examples of things that are happening that are different, right? Like B corporations. I mean, there is a move in this direction, and so the question will be: can it make enough money to make people happy? Can it make enough money to make the self-interested happy? Because B corporations, for-profit companies that exist for the betterment of society, right? That was developed in 2010. 33 states now have laws that in some form recognize that. We've been looking at venture capital and how it works on the tech show, and we're talking a lot about impact investing, where entire venture capital funds exist to invest in companies that perform a societal good. And sometimes those investments are concessionary, as in they lose money. And sometimes they're not. And there are now funds who are saying, no, we don't intend to lose any money, but we do intend to make the world better. And so can capitalism work that way? And what do those incentives look like? It's just something that we're gonna do again. We're going to do it more in depth in future shows. But we're kicking off that conversation now because we decided to basically formalize it because it keeps coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's that. And I think, yes. Oh, that is music I hear. Yes. Amazing how that happens, isn't it?
Wow. You have a magic power.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Aw. That's nice. That's a nice cheerful. All right, let's do the question that gets everybody thinking.
Something I thought I knew.
That's a really tough question.
That's a big old hunker of a question.
Gosh, that is good.
So like back in February or something, I interviewed Daniel Lin. He produced Lego Batman. He did the original Lego movie. Also Lego Ninjago, which came out last month, which, by the way, all of them, none of them have I seen. Just full disclosure here.
What?
I haven't seen them.
No?
I'm not a Lego movie dude.
Not the two Lego movies?
No,
oh,
no,
my gosh, you guys
no,
see a Lego
no,
movie.
No, I don't. No, I don't.
Just watch the
no,
first one. Just
no,
the first
why?
One. It's super good.
I don't.
Because it's super
America.
Good.
I don't have to do anything. Anyway, so talk to Daniel Lin.
Hater.
keep saying that. It's going to stick. And then where am I going to be? And I asked him the question, which of course goes like this. What is something he thought he knew that he later turned out to be wrong about? And here is what he said.
What I learned, Kai, is that I'm a very positive person, and I like to think that everyone's good and ultimately has good intentions. But unfortunately, you know, I'm in a tough, rough and tumble business, and I've learned, unfortunately, there are some bad people out there. There is evil out in this world. And I've just chosen not to go there. I don't work with those people. I've learned just to work with people that I respect, the people I want to be in the trenches with, and just kind of get negativity out of my life. And for me, it's really important right now in this world where it just feels divided and a lot of people are fighting within their own country or countries with each other, that, again, I truly believe now. Before, I was really positive, going, you know what, there's goodness in everyone. Now, you know, unfortunately, I've stared at the face of evil, and I think there is evil, but to turn on a positive side, that there's so many good people out there that have helped me during tough times, and I'm really optimistic.
That was February, by the way, just to be clear, long before any of the recent news out of Hollywood has been coming up.
Mm-hmm. It makes you wonder what those choices actually did and do look like. Because we are having a stand up and be counted moment in Hollywood right now.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Totally.
There was that amazing, amazing essay out today by a writer who worked with Harvey Weinstein on a ton of movies and said, look, yeah, we all knew. And don't pretend you didn't.
Yep. And the whole Me Too thing.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's, I don't even know what to say about that.
Yeah. No, except that it's super profound.
Super profound. And you bet.
And it shouldn't, anyway, yes.
Yeah.
I'm with those women. And on some level, I'm with those women who are saying, like, we shouldn't have to do this. We shouldn't have to bear all for you so that you believe us.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Absolutely true.
And there's something that I love, that I both love and resent about it.
Right. I totally get that. And yet those Me Too things are so striking, so profound, so affecting is a better word. The Make Me Smart question, just to review here, what is something you thought you knew but then found out you were wrong about? Record your answer on your phone, email it to us, makemesmart@marketplace.org, and we will, as we do from time to time, put a bunch of them on the pod, and we'll see how it sounds.
Yes, and in fact, because we love your feedback so much, that is our entire next segment.
In which I win.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes every Sunday wherever you get your podcasts.
Is that kazoos? Is that what those are?
I want an album. We got a lot of feedback on the Man in the High Castle episode. It could be argued that Kai did sort of win, even though nobody liked the book. But man, the conversation was so interesting. But we did leave out a sort of a big chunk that we had talked about in previous shows. And I think we thought we covered it because we talked about it in Facebook Live, which is that central question of why is it okay to put Man in the High Castle on TV, but not the proposed HBO show Confederate, which we did talk about in frankly, my opinion, my like super short opinion is if Man in the High Castle were going to go on TV now, in the current political environment, I think you'd have the same. You'd have the same reaction. Yep. Like, no way in 2017 does Amazon blanket New York City subways with Nazi swastikas. Right. Exactly. No chance. Like, it is a very different world.
Yeah, we did talk about it in episode 33, since we do number these things, which is worth a listen. You can check a post on our site as well that rounds up sort of a lot of reasons why that whole thing bothers a lot of people. It's called Answering Your Questions About the Hashtag No Confederate Campaign. It's on our site, makemesmart.org. We also had, by the way, April Rain, the woman who came up with No Confederate, and also Oscar So White on the podcast. To talk about that whole thing. I mean, it's super, super interesting and really tough. Mm-hmm. And these are interesting times. These are interesting, perilous times. Anyway.
I feel like there should be a parallel drinking game around these are interesting times. Right. Like every time we say that.
Right. Just, or something like
except maybe don't do that because you could end up in the hospital. Yeah. One thing I loved about our discussion is that it went straight to the are we even real?
Yeah.
Like... You know something's getting serious when it ends with, are we even real, though? Are we even here? And as to that burning question, Mike Furker writes, René Descartes thought the response to the simulation argument was cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. How was that?
I got an F in Latin. So let's remember that I am nobody to turn to in Latin pronunciation or definition.
Well, all right. Then never mind.
Yeah.
What is interesting, but you're the guy I ask how to pronounce stuff. That's your whole entire job. He says, Mike says, what is sort of interesting in the current discussion is that tech types have replaced God with themselves in this proposition. And in truth, we will never know. So best to just catch a ball game.
Wow. All right. Well, I'm going Yankees Dodgers in the World Series. So there's that.
Cool.
I also, a week or so ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, talked to Max Reed from New York Magazine about Facebook. James Wesson sent us this.
Even before the Facebook story on Make Me Smart, I was going to delete my Facebook account. And right after listening to that story, I logged right in and deleted it. And deleted my Twitter account and my Reddit account as well, just thinking it was time to do it because of all this manipulation inside of these systems have become so crazy and entrenched that it really makes it hard to use it with, like, a good conscience. And as someone who's been on the social spectrum of the internet since the early 90s with Telnet BBSs and pre-web internet, you know, there's a lot of cycles. And for me, this is a cycle that needs to be over with. And maybe not for everybody, but it's definitely over for me.
So, you know, what's funny is what are people going to look back on Twitter and Facebook like in 20 years? Like the guy just said, Telnet BBS. And what's going to be the thing that's going to make people look back at Facebook and go, what the hell was that?
You know, it's funny because in the metaphor for capitalist systems, which is it's a giant system that no one understands, that is a point that also needs to be made about Facebook, that even the people at Facebook no longer understand how it truly works.
Right.
And my marketplace tech producer, Stephanie Hughes, made like the greatest metaphor I've ever heard. She said, I feel like Facebook at this point is kind of like that line from the Harry Potter books. Never trust anything that can't show you its brain.
Wow.
I know.
Did I miss that?
Isn't that mind blowing?
I guess I did.
Did.
Wild.
I was like, I don't even know where that is in the Harry Potter books, and I read them all. But holy crap, that's exactly what's happening with Facebook.
That's
and
the whole
maybe
point.
Capitalism.
Yep, that's the whole point of the Max Reed piece is that even Zuckerberg doesn't know what Facebook is anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
when systems get sufficiently complex, you lose control of them, and whenever that happens, historically, some outside force steps in, and I guess that's the whether it's government, whether it's a revolution, whether it's a competing company, something steps in when systems get to, and in nature, it's a plague, right? This can't go on forever with Facebook.
But Facebook with 2 billion plus or minus users, I don't think it's going to be a company, right? It's going to have to be some government thing that says you are not doing this. Bzz, right? It's going to have to be.
I mean, that's what, that's what Professor Scott Galloway, who wrote The Four, he said, look, we're going to start seeing multi-billion-dollar fines out of Europe.
Right.
And that might be the thing that finally starts to put a dent in, or it could be consumers leaving. Like it could be, although I'm not that,
I'm not that
hopeful. Now is also the time, speaking in a roundabout way of the book club, to start sending us suggestions for the final book club of 2017. The chances are that it will air in December, and given our track record, it's likely that that should be a short book, like maybe a graphic novel. We should read the Wrinkle in Time graphic novel. That's my first suggestion to get us started.
I don't think I have a suggestion.
There is, and it's wonderful, and I've been trying to make my son read it, and he thinks it's too scary.
Oh, well, if it's scary, I'm out. You know that.
It's not real scary. No, I'm a giant chicken, dude. I will have a chicken off with you any day. it's not that scary.
I probably will win. I'm just saying. I'm a wuss.
I mean, I've never even heard of a chicken off, but I like it.
We could do it.
Oh my God. In a future episode, we're going to make a list of like things you would or would not watch.
Right. That's exactly it. It's a chicken off.
Like, make a list, Jenny. Oh my Jenny, God. Let's make a list of movies and be like, would or would not, or have or have not.
Not even just movies, but just like stuff. And also, by the way, dear listener, send us your chicken off entry items, because there is ripe ground right here.
Totally. What's the thing you wouldn't do? Oh, really? See, I'll do anything. Yeah. If someone else has done it, then I know it won't kill me. Then I'll do it. In fact, I'm sitting right in front of the picture of me.
Death is not the issue.
Jumping out of the helicopter.
I'll jump out of a helicopter. What? Physical danger is not the issue. It's the scary movies. It's like haunted houses. It's, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay, got it. Yeah. Good. Then we're on the same page there. Right. We're totally on the same page there.
All right.
Chicken off. That's going to be an awesome episode.
Email us your suggestions. MakeMeSmart@marketplace.org or, hit us up someplace else. Facebook. We do Facebook Lives on Mondays at noon Pacific. You can throw your comments in there. We'll talk about anything anywhere.
Anything, anywhere. And don't forget the book suggestions, probably, like we said, maybe a holiday read. That is it for us. If you are enjoying this podcast, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Or even if you're not, tell us why. Tell your friends to subscribe. And of course, keep in touch. See you soon.
Chicken off. Totally brilliant.
Chicken off.
Totally brilliant. I'm not making that noise. Make Me Smart is produced by Jenny Josephson and our senior producer, Nancy Fargali. This week's program was engineered by Brian Allison. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez.
Ben Tolliday is so good, by the way, that he recently got to go to Abbey Road just to be awesome. The executive producer of Marketplace is Satara Nieves. The senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. I don't do a lot of impressions, but when I do, it's chickens.
Yeah.
I don't know. I make an awesome chicken impression.
There is, of course, the chicken dance, but that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, nobody wants to see that. Okay, I lied. I want to. Make a video.
Not going to happen.
Send us your chicken dance. Send us your chicken impressions.
Don't. Do make not send us chicken dance imprint. No, don't. No.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.